My name is Chris Williams. I'm the Director of Communication and Operations in the Davis School District. And I am joined today by Dr. Daryl White, who serves as the Boundary Consultant for the Davis School District Board of Education. It's been a few years now that we had a podcast. It was back in 2017 that we had a podcast for our high school boundary study when we brought Farmington High School online, and I thought it'd be a good time to bring Dr. White back and give him an opportunity to talk to us about the elementary boundary study that he's currently involved with. So, Daryl, good to have you with me.
Thank you.
There may be people out there who are very familiar with you, but there may be some who don't know who you are. Can you just give us an idea of a little bit about yourself and what brings you to this point where you're helping the Board of Education?
Thank you, Chris. I served as superintendent in Davis School District for about 9 years, retired in 2002, and I have served in a variety of other positions, including superintendent in some other districts, as well as the education deputy for two different governors in the state of Utah. And I'm here because the superintendent and board asked me to assist them with some boundary studies. And because I have a great commitment to Davis School District, I'm willing to do that. So that's why I'm here.
You've served as a boundary consultant for, I'm thinking at least three boundary studies. I could be wrong.
Six.
Has it been six? Okay. Okay.
It goes back to the time prior to my being superintendent in Davis School District, actually, with Northridge High School.
Oh, wow. Wow. So you've seen this growth in Davis County. It's been unbelievable. As I look at, for instance, the west side of the I-15 corridor, I'm amazed at how things have changed.
Yes. The growth has been significant in Davis County. Over the years, when I was superintendent, we had about 59,000 students and had a period of a few years of stability. And it was after I left that growth began again. And I think, I don't know, what's your enrollment now?
Just over 72,000 or so. I do know October 1 is coming up. That's the magical date in our minds when we publish the actual enrollment numbers. My understanding is that we may be up 400 students in addition to what we thought we were going to be. So that may bring an additional 800 students or so to our school district compared to last year. So we're continuing to grow.
That growth is equivalent to the size of a large elementary school.
This is true. Challenging. So you mentioned elementary school. We are now building our 62nd elementary school, located out in West Layton. The address I've got is 2504 West Sunburst Drive in West Layton. It's going to be opening in the fall of 2020. So, of course, because we have this new elementary school coming on board, you come on board to help us with the boundary process. I do know, because I've attended school board meetings, the board gave you three things to keep in mind as you went forward in this boundary study. Can you just go over those?
I would be happy to, Chris. The board gave us three goals. One, of course, was to prepare boundaries for a new elementary school to be opened in West Layton. And in that process, to reduce enrollment at overcrowded elementary schools in the area. And the third goal was to balance enrollments in the study area among those schools that are in the study area to the greatest extent possible. Just to give you an idea of the need for that, with 62 schools in the school district, Sand Springs, which is a part of this boundary study area, has the largest enrollment of all 62 of those schools. Ellison Park, which is also included in the boundary study, has the second largest enrollment, and Heritage has the seventh largest enrollment. So, Sand Springs is just over 1,000 students, which is way too large for an elementary school, especially when the capacity for that school is somewhere between 700 and 800. So the need was certainly clear when those goals were presented to us.
You know, that's interesting. Just thinking back, when I was hired on in 1999, those three schools that you just mentioned were not on the map. They had not been built. So when I talked about the growth out in the west part of the county, incredible.
It is. We went, when I was superintendent, we had 48 elementary schools.
Wow. Very interesting. People love Davis County. They want to raise their kids here.
That's true.
So, Dr. White, you serve as a consultant to the school board in the boundary process. You're not out there acting alone. You rely on other people.
That's correct. There's a working group consisting of about 12 key people in the school district who provide the data and help in making any decisions relative to a boundary proposal. The decision about the boundaries, of course, is made by the Board of Education. What the working group and the consultant do is provide a proposal to the board for their consideration.
So the working group are people who work for the school district, who, for instance, the director of planning, who has information regarding enrollments, the elementary director, people like that.
An assistant superintendent is involved in that working group, as well as the elementary principals who are involved in the study area. They're key people on that working group.
So I know during the September 3rd board meeting, you presented a PowerPoint in which you showed the board the area, and you walked through the location of the elementary schools that you mentioned. Can you just go through that a little bit? Just explain what you share with the board and maybe some of the challenges that you're finding as you're looking into drawing proposed boundaries.
Okay. If you don't mind, let me talk a bit about the process that we go through as we get to that point of presenting a proposal. That's a very lengthy timeline. If you look at the full process, it extends over years because it goes back to the point where property is purchased and decisions of that nature are made years in advance. This timeline, the specific work began in March and will conclude on December 3rd when the board makes the final decision about these boundaries. The board in Davis School District has consistently, at least in all the years I've worked with them, has consistently been focused on a process that involves a great deal of input from the public, especially from parents. And so a lot of opportunity is provided for that. We meet with school community councils. We have open houses where everyone is invited to come in and view what the boundary proposal is and make suggestions in writing and orally to the staff members who are there. We have a public hearing where, again, the public is invited to come in and make comments directly to the Board of Education relative to the boundary proposal. And then the boundaries are considered at two separate board meetings where public is also invited to comment. So public input is a significant part of this. In addition to that, we have on the district website input process via email where parents can give written comments. Every one of those written comments are read by members of the work-study group, and although we can't react to everyone, respond to everyone, I should say, everyone is taken into consideration when decisions are made relative to the boundaries.
Now, I do know, Daryl, that back in April, we sent out a survey to parents to have them rank their top priorities of aspects that should be kept in mind as we draw up the boundaries. These were priorities that we listed and asked them to rank. So at the top of that parent survey, of which 488 parents responded to, they ranked safe walking routes as the top priority, followed by proximity to schools and student capacity of buildings. That was followed by school feeder patterns, natural dividing lines, language immersion programs, and socioeconomic balance of the schools. Can you comment on those survey results for me?
None of the priorities can be adhered to when you're building new boundaries strictly, because sometimes they even come into conflict. Proximity to school, if we left all the students who are within walking distance of Sand Springs Elementary School in that school, we would not reduce their capacity, which is a major goal of this study. We just would not be able to do that. So reducing that enrollment is a higher priority than proximity to that school. So anyway, they become the guidelines for us as we work through the process.
So you mentioned within walking distance of Sand Springs. What sort of distance are we talking about when you say that?
The transportation program, by the way, is a state program. They set the rules, and based on those rules, they provide funding for transportation. The district runs the transportation program, but the rules are set by the state. And for elementary school, 1.5 miles, 1.5 miles, anyone outside of that 1.5 miles is eligible for transportation. And that's 1.5 miles measured by an approved public access, like sidewalks, roads, etc.
Okay.
The cities, of course, have a great deal of a responsibility in this, in that they are responsible for roads and sidewalks. They're responsible for public safety, which includes crossing guards. So it becomes a partnership with those cities. So with that kind of a process we go through, we're at that point where the work-study group came up with a proposal and presented to the board on September 3rd. That proposal takes the boundaries for the three schools in the study area, the three existing schools, divides it up now into four schools. And what are some of the challenges that we faced in doing that? First of all, the population density in those areas is concentrated around certain areas. For example, Sand Springs Elementary School, the reason they have over 1,000 students is that the population concentration is right around that school. Uh-huh. So when we drew up boundaries, we end up with a very relatively small geographic area for Sand Springs Elementary School. They still have between 750 and 800 students that will be attending that school, even though their geographic area is smaller. That means then for the new school, which is in an area that will eventually have additional developments and a great increase in population, it is a much larger geographic area, and actually we will be taking students from areas up north and drive them by an existing school to get them to the new school. And we have parents who say, why would you do that? Well, the reason is the only way you can reduce enrollment in an area where there's a heavy concentration of population is to take students from close to that school and move them to the new school. So we'll actually be transporting a number of students who may have been able to walk to Sand Springs, for example. We'll be transporting them to the new school in order to reduce enrollment. And the reduction of enrollment is extremely important for a variety of reasons: safety, convenience, and especially education. Large elementary schools are not as efficient and personal and educationally effective as a more reasonable-sized elementary school.
Again, I'm Chris Williams. I'm the Director of Communication Operations with the Davis School District. I'm joined by Dr. Darrell White, who's serving as a boundary consultant for the Davis School District Board of Education. At the school board meeting, immersion was something that was brought up by a board member to explain a little bit about the Chinese and Spanish immersion programs that we have out in that area. The programs have been very successful. A lot of parents want their students to be involved in those programs. Talk a little bit about how you have to keep those immersion programs in mind as you consider proposed boundaries.
Thank you. You notice that was one of our priorities, and we have spent considerable time looking at the immersion programs. And language immersion programs are valuable programs for those who want a foreign language. It's a very effective way to acquire language skills. It does create some complications because the board does not provide language immersion in every elementary school. In the case of this study area, there are two language immersions programs, Chinese and Spanish immersion programs. They will remain at the schools where they are, which is Spanish at Sand Springs and Chinese at Heritage. Those will remain there, and students who have been in those programs will be allowed to remain by district policy in those programs, even though they may not be in that boundary attendance area. They will be allowed to attend that school by variance to continue with their language immersion program. So that creates a complication as we try to balance enrollments. We have to take into consideration of those students who may not be in the boundary area but are in the immersion program. Now, that creates some complication for families, of course, who have more than one child in elementary school. If they're both in the immersion program, or all of the children, whether it's two or more, then, of course, they will be allowed to continue in those programs. If they have a child who's just coming into elementary school, they would have to apply for the immersion program. They are not guaranteed to receive a variance for that child to attend the immersion program. They do receive some special consideration, some points in the lottery process, so they have a better than average chance of getting their child into the immersion program if they have a sibling who's already in the immersion program. So that's a question that a lot of parents ask. And a lot of parents have asked, will the new school have language immersion? The answer is no, it will not. The two programs will remain at the schools where they have been.
I do know, because I attended a community council meeting the other night, a question was raised, well, what about junior high and high school boundaries? You're involved with a boundary study. Will those be included in any of this work that you're doing?
But the only way they're included, there will be no change to junior high and high school boundaries as a result of this boundary study. Whatever junior high and high school students, neighborhoods, families have been assigned to, they will remain assigned to those junior highs and high schools. We have to take it into consideration because we don't want to end up with a situation where a very small group of students from an elementary school are attending a junior high school. And so we take that into consideration, and we shoot for either 100% feeder pattern to a junior high, or at least close to 50-50 as we can get.
Okay. You mentioned earlier about meeting with city officials and making sure that you are very cognizant about future growth that may be out in the area. I do know, is it the Ellison Park area that where there's going to be a big change, as far as I understand? Can you share a little bit about that?
Well, yes, I assume maybe what you're talking about, there's a beautiful golf course in the Ellison Park area that has now been turned into a residential development. There will be over 200 homes, residences in that development that will have a significant impact on that area as that develops. There are at least a dozen other approved developments within this area of the three existing schools, which are in various stages of development, and there is still considerable open land that new developments will be approved in the future. So we strive to try to come up with boundaries that will last for at least 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is that that's probably a maximum number of years that these boundaries will last because of the development that's taking place, and some additional boundary changes will be made in the future because of those developments.
I've heard, because of my experience in other boundary studies in the past, some people will come to us and say, does my input really matter? Do you really listen? Does it really have an impact on anything in this process? What's your feedback when someone presents a question like that?
Well, the answer is yes, it matters a great deal. Those of us who work with the boundary studies love kids, and we want to do the very best we can for those kids and their families. And so we want to know as much detail as possible. Obviously, we cannot meet everyone's first choice, and there will be some people who will be attending a school that is not their first choice because of proximity or whatever priority they may be involved with. But every comment we received, whether it's verbal or written, is given careful consideration. We go back and we redrive the neighborhoods again. We look at the situation with sidewalks. We look at a variety of options and alternatives, and we make changes to the proposal that make sense. And sometimes that public input gives us a very different perspective. Significant changes have been made in previous boundary proposals based on public input. Can't guarantee that there will be any of the people who were involved in coming up with this proposal, for example, are very experienced and intelligent people who all are committed to doing the very best they can for students and their families. And so the decisions were not made lightly in the initial proposal, which was put on the table. But it is possible that changes will take place based on that public input.
Is there something that parents should keep in mind as they are providing some input to you in emails or in the public settings, in meetings or community councils?
Yes. We say to parents that the very best input they can give us is detail about how this proposal impacts their family and or their neighborhood. We're not asking parents to try to draw new boundaries. That doesn't make any sense. If we had thousands of people out there trying to draw boundaries, all based upon their own personal point of view, it would create chaos. What we want to know is, how does this proposal impact your family? And then beyond that, perhaps your neighborhood. That then becomes valuable information for us to look at the broader picture of the total boundary proposal.
Okay, great. I do know, because I'm involved with this, my department is involved with this, we have put information on our district website right from the district homepage, and that is davis.k12.ut.us. There's a news story about the boundary process. There's a link to a page dedicated to the boundary study itself. So information is there. We've got information about the timeline, frequently asked questions. We have an interactive map where people can enter their address and find out where they would be in the proposed boundary. We also have an email address where people are asked to submit their comments. That email address is L Boundary Study, which is just EL, standing for elementary, lboundarystudy@dsdmail.net. That's the address that people can turn to and submit those comments to the working group. And Dr. White, I know you said that those comments are not ignored. They're read over.
They are not ignored. Every single comment, whether it's verbal at an open house or public hearing, or written as an email input, they're all given full consideration by this study group.
So maybe as we conclude, can you just bring us up to speed on where we are in the timeline now, and when does the school board get to consider this as an action item?
Yes, we are at that point where we're meeting with the three school community councils. And I might just mention, in those meetings, we are meeting with the school community council in their official meeting. Public are invited to come in, but they are not invited to participate. So if you want a question to be raised there, and you know a school community council member, talk to that member of the school community council and let them raise the question. Because if we allow the public to begin asking questions in those meetings, then we've destroyed the effectiveness of that school community council meeting. So we always have a number of people attending those meetings, and they gather valuable information from the comments and discussion that takes place, but they're not allowed to participate in the meeting. It's a school community council meeting. We have an open house, which is scheduled for September 26th at Shoreline Junior High School from 6 to 8 p.m. Okay. In that setting, anyone who wants to come in can come in, view the displays of the boundaries, ask questions of staff who will be there to answer those questions, and will be invited to give input. Especially written input, written comments are accepted there, as well as the questions and comments to the staff members. And so that's open to everyone. Then we have a public hearing, which is with the Board of Education. It's a public hearing for the Board of Education to receive input from anyone who wants to come in and sign up and make a comment or ask a question about the proposal at that public hearing scheduled on October 15th. I think that will probably be at 6 o'clock. Then on November 6th, the board will receive the proposal and they will take their first action on a proposal. Then on December 3rd, in their board meeting, they will take final action on these proposed boundaries.
Okay, super. Any concluding thoughts that you'd like to share?
Yes, just this thought. Based on my many years of experience and many boundary changes over the years in a growing district like Davis, we recognize that parents and students and grandparents have great concern about the school that their child attends, and we recognize that, and we try to meet their needs to the best extent possible. Even though you may not receive the assignment to a school that would be your first choice at this point, all the schools in Davis County are great schools, and you will soon adjust. And you will find a great educational opportunity in whatever school you're assigned to.
Okay, super. Dr. White, thank you for coming in and sharing some of the process of this boundary study. We will look forward to meeting people at the open house and hearing them if they choose to address the school board. And if they want to send emails, we will look forward to reading those emails and considering their views.